Hi, everybody. Ben Starr here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And in the studio with me today, of course, Kevin O'Donohue, director of the Positive Mind Center here on West 57th Street. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Ben. Happy New Year.
Yeah, well, here we go. We are back in the new cycle of a new year. Summer's over, back to school, back to work. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. I can't believe, Kevin, just hearing that last promo before the show, I can't believe that it's been 15 years since 9/11. I mean, that is unbelievable. It is just insane how fast time goes by. And when I think back on 9/11, I remember the first thing everyone was thinking was, who did this? You know?
Yeah.
Who did this? Who can we blame for this horrible atrocity? For this, you know, this act of murder, this act of terrorism. That was our first instinct, was how, and you know, that was what everyone wanted to know. Who did this? Even before why. You know, we didn't get to why until later. It was who. Yeah. And I think that's something that we're going to talk a little bit about today, which is the instinct to blame. The instinct to assign responsibility and the inclination to do that, especially in the context of a relationship.
Yeah, and you bring it up in a good way, I think. You know, blame might be such a primal first step in healing yourself. Because I think the first reaction is shock. I mean, when you still look at the images of 9/11, the people down there, and even, you know, when I remember hearing it, it was definitely a state of shock. Real shock. And then when those buildings came down, I mean, who thought those buildings could come down in 1 hour?
Right.
I mean, total shock. And then, of course, I think, yes, you know, blame is the first thing. We want to find the antagonist, the one who set this in motion. And so I think blame is a first step psychologically. To try and heal yourself from this shock and find an answer and find an enemy. So blame can be, you know, the starting point for a journey.
Especially though in the context of a relationship, isn't it, Kevin? I mean, you do a lot of marital counseling, couples counseling. You see a lot of individual relationships. You, more than anyone, probably sees the cycle of blame. And it is a cycle, isn't it? When we get into the blame, I mean, when you think about a typical argument between a couple, any couple, right? Any kind of couple, right? Any kind of person. Arguments, they so often follow a very simple and similar pattern based around the word you, right? In an argument, you got person number one saying, well, you this and you that. You don't, you never, you always, you. You. And person number two turns around and says, well, no, you did this and this and this, and you don't.
Have you been in all my sessions?
I haven't, but I mean, I can imagine. I can imagine. And it just goes, you. And at the end, really, that doesn't advance the relationship or the conversation or the situation anywhere.
No.
I mean, I would love to get a transcript of one of your sessions, Kevin, a transcript of one of your couples counseling sessions and just see how many times the word you appears. And that is really where we're going today. We want to talk about blame in the context of relationships, the blame game and how to break that cycle.
Well, you would probably find it only in the first two sessions or maybe not even the second. Because couples quickly realize that blaming is really a symptom of disappointment. It's really not about what they're blaming the other for. Usually, you know, I always say, well, what's the want behind the blame? What is it you looking for? And they drop in to this experience like, oh, my marriage, my relationship isn't the way I want it to be. The whole thing, this episode, this incident of what I'm blaming her or him for is symbolic of my disappointment in general. And it violates this dream, this image that I have for the relationship, and I don't know what to do about it.
Would you say it's a defense mechanism, the tendency to blame? I mean, let's say, you know, someone's confronted on something that they did that might have been hurtful or insensitive.
Yeah.
And that can be a painful realization and a painful admission to make, right? That the person themselves has made a mistake somehow. And is that a time where you see someone turning to blame, claiming that maybe, hey, it was the other person or it was this circumstance that made me do what I did, instead of really admitting to wrongdoing?
Well, you know, I think it's human nature. We hate to be embarrassed, and we hate shame more than blame. It's, you know, I frequently think blame is like a way to avoid my own personal shame.
Or deflect it.
Yeah. You know, so when people are, you know, in this blame cycle, they're in an extreme state. You know, remember that show we did about being out of your mind?
Uh-huh.
You know, and we talked about the three qualities of people that are not in reality. And one of them was blame, and you can get that on the archive. But one of them was blame. And we know that when people are chronically blaming other people, blaming the government, blaming the media, blaming my parents, you know, blaming my kids, blaming traffic,
blaming everyone and everything, essentially. Yeah, we know that outside of myself.
Yeah, we know that that person is out of their mind. You know, they're not really in their senses. So when a couple comes in, you know, and thankfully we get really quite wonderful couples, and, you know, they're just dealing with this on a very small level. Like, you know, we can't seem to agree on anything. He blames me, she blames me all the time. And we got to figure out, you know, what are we really not saying? And that's frequently where it leads. What are you not saying to each other? And then, of course, so you have a part in this, don't you? Because you haven't been saying some things that you've needed to say for a long time.
Give me an example.
Well, if you're disappointed with your sex life, with your partner, and, you know, it goes on year after year after year, and then you know, you start blaming about leaving clothes on the floor, or you're showing up late, or not spending money or time on me or with me. You find all these other things, and in the background is this, I haven't told you, but I have been frustrated about our sex life for 5 years now. And so these ancillary superficial blamings really track back often to words that we haven't said. Now, we're using sex as an example, but it can be other things, like you never loved my parents, or you never loved my family. You know, it can be any sort of source. But often it is some kind of real, real disappointment.
So you see the blame happening around a lot of secondary, superficial issues to cover up the more profound, deeper issues.
Yeah. So let's take finances, you know.
That's also a huge point of contention in many relationships.
Many relationships. And so when the finances are low, and, you know, you're spending too much money on this, or you're spending not, you know.
Or you're not making enough.
Or you're not making enough money. Right. And there's another blame. And, of course, what is it about? It's about, I want to be in a relationship that's financially secure, that's moving forward, that I can trust and relax and let down.
Ultimately, it's about, I want to feel safe.
I think that's a big way to put it, a good way to put it. I want to feel safe. And, you know, what's going to put your relationship and your life more in jeopardy than low finances? So, you know, that's a great, great example. And so when we get couples in here at the center, you know, we get these, you know, first or in two sessions, superficial kind of things. And then we teach people how to break, you know, tune into what's really going on. A, what have I not been talking about? B, what am I really disappointed in? And C, how do I learn how to be direct and tell my partner what I need from them and, you know, stop all of this blame stuff?
Well, look, we know that blame has significant detrimental impact on relationships. I mean, first and foremost, chronic blaming, and these are according to Dr. Tom Jordan, who's written a whole book on this. chronic blaming is a form of emotional abuse. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, and, you know, it's a really sad thing between two adults to see chronic blaming going on. You can just see each, you know, the blamee melting physically. I mean, you see the low self-esteem creep in, even in front of you, when somebody's being blamed. So it's a form of abuse.
It's like a verbal beating.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, it is.
And it's very painful. And as you said, Kevin, the blamee, the person who's been subjected to a chronic blame over time, oftentimes for things that may be beyond their control, they can come to now start believing that they're actually responsible for these things.
And that's a classic sign of low self-esteem. You start to believe the other party. That's low self-esteem has taken hold. And part of therapy is to prevent that. Like, no. You know, what does it mean to tell her to stop? What does it mean to tell him, you can't say things like that to me? What does it mean, you know, to stand your ground? And have you practiced standing your ground? I mean, we're both, you know, you're adults. And blame is really just and it's not this huge deal. I mean, because on some level, everybody knows blame is really a substitute for something else.
It's a very good point. You know, you mentioned self-esteem, Kevin, and in terms of being the recipient of blame and how that can affect someone's self-esteem. Dr. Jordan, that I just mentioned, also talks about self-esteem and talks about the vicious cycle as someone's lower self-esteem leads to the lower expectations and lower standards for what they're willing to put up with in the relationship.
Yeah.
And so that creates a very negative, very unhealthy cycle that people will get trapped in. And a lot of the roots of this self-blame and this acceptance of blame come from our childhood.
Yeah.
Don't they? I mean, think about how we learned as children that we could make people feel a certain way. And we learn it generally from our parents.
You made me feel.
Exactly. Imagine mom or dad saying something like, you make me so angry. You're making me mad. And the child internalizes that. A child believes, you know, comes to believe that that really is their responsibility. But look, and we know this is a hard one to really internalize and accept for many people. But we know that you can't make someone feel anything. We can only trigger underlying emotions that may already happen to be there. I mean, short of a physical or sexual attack, right? And I will leave that out. Because certainly, if I poked you in the eye, Kevin, you'd be justified in saying, hey, that really made me angry. But if we're having an adult conversation, and as you said, you know, this is, we're talking about situations between adults. If there's something that I say to you that provokes a response, an emotional response, that's an emotion that was already there beneath the surface, wasn't it?
I think you make a good point, for sure. You know, but it's hard to be conscious all the time and think, oh, what you did tapped into my sense of violation and then therefore I'm angry. And so, you know, I think you're probably right, but I think people want to have that immediate discharge, you know. You did this to me and that's why I'm feeling this way. And I don't like feeling this way.
I don't like feeling responsible for my feelings. Is that it?
True. My certainly bad feelings.
If I can put the responsibility externally, if I can put it on you or someone else, right, through blaming, then I'm better. I'm safer.
Yeah. Maybe. But, you know, I think these negative feelings like hate and bad, when I feel sad or bad or anxious, you know, there's some discharge, there's some relief when I can track it and attribute it to somebody else immediately. I don't have to process what triggered it so that these, you know, and own that these things live inside of me. We don't want anger to be living inside of us. We want it to be situational. But the truth is that anger is in all of us all the time, and it's a good thing. It can energize us and focus us.
You're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. We're talking about blame. Blame in the context of relationships, how it can be destructive, how we can break the cycle of blaming. But I want to ask you, Kevin, what about projection and shifting the blame? This is a psychological concept that I'd like you to shed some light on. What about people who maybe internally they know that they're at fault, but they project their perceived deficiencies, if you want to call it that, onto others?
Yeah.
Can you shed some light on that?
Well, sure. I mean, projection is one of the major defense mechanisms that people use. And often when people come into therapy and they're talking about somebody else, like, oh, I don't, you know, she's this way or he's that way, and I hate when they do this and I hate when I do that. You know, as a therapist, we sit back and we like, they're talking about themselves. What projection is I disown a part of myself. A part of myself, and I place it out on them like a projection screen so that I can see it outside of me and attribute it to other people. So it's a very clever mechanism, that helps you manage your life. But ultimately it's destructive and debilitating and exhausting, because you're not getting to know and get past these parts of yourself that you don't like.
You know, when we were talking about this topic before the show and doing some preparation and some research around it, I couldn't help but think when this idea of projection and blame shifting came up, I couldn't help but think of the countless congressmen and senators and even pastors, these people who are so homophobic and outspoken anti-gay that turn out to be gay themselves.
Yeah.
And
so they're projecting an
image. Yeah, I mean, they're so insecure, and so, you know, they're so stuck in this self-hatred that they're projecting it on the rest of the world or on an entire subset of people. It's unbelievable.
It's sad, right? I mean, when just as you're talking about it, isn't that a sad thing that a successful person has to, you know, project a certain image to the public in order for them to be really acceptable?
Yeah, I mean, the one that struck me the most, Kevin, was there was a guy in Colorado. I forget his name, but he was a pastor of one of those big mega churches.
Yeah.
You know, they have their service in like a stadium with 12,000 people on a Sunday service.
Yeah.
And this guy was, you know, your kind of classical Christian conservative, talking about like the gay agenda and how he thought it was so destructive. But it turned out that on his time off he was meeting gay escorts off of Craigslist in a motel room and doing drugs with them.
Well, you bring up a good point. I mean, maybe this is a way for the public, and this is the WBAI public and people in general, when people are attacking groups, a whole group, with vitriol and hatred, really, you know, look behind them and see, well, what is it they're trying to avoid in themselves? Usually, and so blame, it tracks back to blame, you know. When you're blaming, you know, suspend your judgment. See what's there. What are they really trying to say? What's really hidden behind these words, behind this anger, behind this vitriol, behind this dismissal? Dismissal of a whole group of people. It's something in themselves.
And to go back to the notion of couples, Kevin, couples who blame themselves, I mean, at its core, they're both kind of right and kind of wrong at the same time, aren't they? It's like that famous saying, you know, there's three sides to every argument, mine, yours, and the truth. Kind of points that there's a... that there are underlying issues on both sides that do need to be addressed.
Let's say that part of what you're saying is true. How about we do that?
Yeah.
So isn't that so disarming? Let's say that part of what you're saying is true.
It is disarming because now it forces me to at least consider that part of what you're saying is true.
Right.
And that's why what you're saying is so powerful.
Yeah. And people, couples will laugh at themselves when you throw in that sentence. Let's say part of what John is saying is true. What would that mean to you? How would you feel if part of what he's saying is true? And, you know, you just see the melting happen. You know, you just see the tension drop and the body relax. It's just a simple thing. Let's just say that part of what he's saying is true. And so blame is an easy thing, is an easy one to disarm in couples and people, because on a certain level, everybody knows when they're blaming that part of what is going on is really about me also. You know, it's like the finger pointing, the thumb is back at you, right?
Yeah, that's a good one too.
So,
well, okay, so a friend of Armand's named Brenda Shoshana wrote a book called Why Men Leave. And she wrote this book some years ago, but essentially, you know, after every relationship, she said women ask the question, what went wrong? And they're asking themselves, they ask their girlfriends, they ask their therapists. And what this woman, this author, Brenda Shoshana, did was that she went and asked men themselves and, you know, did interviews with many different men, hundreds of men, as to why their relationship went south, why it fell apart. And she found that a very large number of men left their relationship because they felt the blame was overwhelming and they felt an inability to please or satisfy their partner. And let's just say, you know, of course, the impulse when we hear, oh, couldn't please or satisfy, we immediately kind of jump to the sexual, but it's much more than that, right?
Sure.
It's a satisfaction in a more of a profound spiritual or financial or all kinds of ways that don't have to be sexual. And she found that many of these men were leaving these relationships because they couldn't deal with the blame that they were feeling based on their partner's real or perceived lack of satisfaction in the relationship.
Yeah. I think it's a fascinating concept. Is that in the archives? Because I would love to get her back on. This is a fascinating topic.
You know, I don't know that she ever appeared on the show. I just know that Armand knew her on some level, whether personal or professional.
A lot of men say, I couldn't fix her. I couldn't fix my wife. I couldn't fix my girlfriend.
Women say that too. I think there are some people enter into relationships and they have this sort of hero complex,
right?
Where they want to, you know, they want to nurse this broken winged bird back to health.
Yes, right.
And I've known people, I've known both men and women who have that kind of mentality going into relationships.
But let's take it back to the blame. So the theory is that I couldn't please her. I couldn't get her to stop blaming me.
Yeah. I couldn't satisfy her on some level, right? Maybe it was sexual. Maybe it was emotional. It was intellectual. Maybe it was financial.
It's usually something beyond sexual.
Yeah.
You know, it's the person. I couldn't satisfy that person in them, that self in them. You know, beyond who we were as a couple, I couldn't really get to that place that would make them happy. I couldn't get her happy. And so I want to read this book. It sounds terrific.
So, Kevin, how do we get out of this cycle? How do we get out of this blame game, you know, vicious cycle that doesn't really produce results as far as healing conflict or, you know, improving relationships? How do people break free of that?
Well, of course, it always gets down to owning my part in it, owning, you know, my feelings. And I find with couples often that it all gets down to what you're not saying to each other. And frequently it tracks back to, you know, feelings you've had in the past. So, you know, there's a method. You know, during this argument, I felt, you know, hurt, let's say. And what triggered that feeling was, I felt like you weren't paying attention to me. I felt excluded. And so you get a little more specific. You say, I felt this, and then what triggered it was this. And then you say, when I felt ignored, it reminded me of my past boyfriend, my old relationships, which tracks back to a sense of futility and hopelessness. And that can remind me often of even beyond, before boyfriends, before adult relationships. It can remind me of my position with my siblings and my family, my parents. So again, so it's first, during this, I felt hurt, or whatever your feeling could be. Secondly, what triggered that particular feeling of hurt was when you did this. That reminded me of something else. And then here's the trick. Lately, I've been feeling tired, let's say, or I've been feeling stuck in my own head, or I've been feeling frustrated at work, or I've been feeling pretty, you know, confused or conflicted lately. And so now it has this fourth element, something that's been going on, because partners often can go months and months and months without checking in with each other. And you might be going through something, and I might see my partner going through something and not say anything. In fact, frequently we avoid saying the things that we're going through. It's only in retrospect that you say, oh, that was when I was worried about my job and I felt like I was stuck and I was going through that for months. You remember that? And he said, yeah, I do remember that. And so lately I've been feeling this. And when you're able to say that, you're starting to own a part of it. You know, part of it is basically how I've been feeling.
Instead of passing it off or pointing the finger, going towards the blame.
Yeah. And there's the problem solving. And there's when it comes like, oh, I see my part in this. I can see my part in this. I still love you. My God, I still love you. But I see my part in this. And what I can do the next time is, or what you can do the next time is, and then finally, how do we re-meet after this acknowledgement?
I wonder how many of you out there feel stuck in a cycle of blame, whether you are, you know, being blamed chronically and it's starting to affect your relationship or your self-esteem, or whether, you know, you feel that maybe you're the one who is pointing the finger and you need to take steps to really own your side of it. And we'd love to hear from you. We're going to be taking your calls in a few minutes here after the musical break. And we'd love to hear from you about how you've dealt with that and how you deal with both receiving blame and giving blame. And
remember, the truth is the blamer doesn't feel very good either.
Well, no.
You know, the blamer really doesn't like blaming. They know it on some level. I don't like doing this. I don't like myself when I'm doing this.
And as you said, the blamer may be doing so out of an impulse to avoid.
Generally it is.
Right? Yeah. An avoidance of what someone may know deep down.
Yeah.
You know, they are very much a part of,
yeah,
if not responsible for, then at least partly responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But the avoidance pushes us to blame someone else. So you are listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI in New York City. I'm Ben Starr. I'm here with Kevin O'Donohue. We are here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. And we'd love to take your calls. After the break, we're going to play some music. We'll be back. But the number to call, if we'd love to hear from you about your experience with blame, whether you're the blamer or the blamee. The number to call here in the studio, 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back after this with your calls.
Stuck in a rut, don't get stuck in a rut, stuck in a rut.
Clint and Fearon here on WBAI, The Blame Game. Thought it was a little apropos way to take our break today. What do you think, Kevin?
Absolutely. And the background music reminded me of my vacation. Anyway, we have Abby on the phone. Abby, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
What have you got to say about blame?
I think as a kid, I grew up in foster care because my mom was mentally ill.
Okay.
And I'm 58, and I lived in foster care. I was a drug addict for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I blamed the system because I felt like they destroyed me. They didn't come see about me. They threw me in foster care. They didn't check up. And when the social workers did come, but I just felt like the system blamed me. I blamed the system for all of that because the system was like all backwards and everything.
Right.
So when I got into my marriage, I've been married for 25 years, and sometimes I think I blame my husband for a lot of things that go on. We have a good marriage. We have our problems like every normal couple, but I think that at sometimes I could blame my husband for things because of the past. You know?
If you could go back, Abby, and get what you needed, tell people about the foster care system. If you could get what you needed at particular points in your childhood, what would you have gotten that wasn't there?
Love and really having a family, like a mom and dad, like the way my parents was. Even though my mom was mentally ill, she was a good mom. And then my dad was very supportive. So if I could still get that love from them, like I got from my parents, I think I wouldn't have blamed the system at all.
Mm. Do you get that?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you long for
and the support? Yeah. And in foster care, sometimes you don't feel like you're part of the family.
Yeah.
They separate you. And sometimes you feel like maybe if the money wasn't involved, they wouldn't be involved.
Yeah. I'm just struck by how what a survivor you are. It sounds like your spirit is still intact in spite of all of this. And you're not...
Because I had demons, though. I was a kleptomaniac.
Uh-huh.
I stole. I used drugs.
Right.
And in the last 5 years, recovery has been so good. I've been straight almost 24 years of drugs.
Congratulations.
But I recovered from being for stealing about 5 years.
So, you're a person who takes responsibility. You know, this is such a refreshing thing, and it's probably why your spirit is intact. You have, somewhere along the line, you took responsibility, and, you cleaned it up. And now you're even willing to give your marriage a break and consider that you have a good marriage in spite of the ups and downs. This is the kind
right.
of, you've arrived to this place, and what a testimony.
But I get frustrated with my husband because he don't cop to his.
Yes, that's
that's
a really good point. Well, look, we got to go, but I want to say you can tell your husband what it is you need from him. Tell him what you need. He might still blame and not cop to his own stuff, but you can tell him what you need from him. And it sounds like you know that one thing you need is a sense of being loved.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you
this
for
was
calling.
This was a good topic. Thank you.
We're so glad you called. Be well. Bye-bye.
And you have a nice day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Abby.
Bye.
Yeah.
Take care.
Some spirits just survive and make it. I mean, who could not blame the foster care system?
212-757-5555. Love to hear your take on the blame game, where you fit into all of it, what your role is, if it's something you struggle with as far as blaming others, or whether you feel you've been the recipient or the blamee of a lot of blaming.
Yeah. And she's been on a journey. Blame is a journey. A journey to ownership. I did some bad things and I should really clean it up. And she's done that. Okay.
And it's a good point. It is a journey, Kevin. I personally have been on that journey myself. And I think the important thing is that people who are taking personal responsibility for their happiness have a much higher ceiling of how happy they can truly be versus people who are holding others responsible for their happiness or unhappiness.
Yeah, there's no shot at being happy if you're attributing your happiness or lack of it to other people. There's no shot at it. You just won't get there. You have to say, it starts with me. I was dealt a raw hand. I got bad cards. But I have to take ownership of what I've got, and it's me who has to make myself happy. We have Gene on the line. Gene, how are you today?
Well, how are you guys doing?
Okay.
It is a good topic. I learned by being the blamer and being blamed, like growing up. You know, my mother was like, oh, my God, I don't want all these kids, and that's the reason why I'm, you know, and then I didn't understand it, but then there's certain things that causes us, I feel, through my own experience, to feel that way. Sometimes just trying to fit into society,
mm-hmm.
or somebody was talking about before, like a gay person, and the society, they couldn't be themselves, or a person of color, you know, all those black people, they're violent, So my mother was kind of plagued by the racism,
right.
And so it made her feel like no matter what, she wasn't good enough. So in turn, I guess the real problem was that, but so she blamed, you know, us having children. And so I wind up understanding that because a lot of that I had internalized. And I just start looking at life as a class, I guess, after going through a lot, that we, you know, we may get cut, but it's, do we put a Band-Aid on it, or do we really go to the womb and try to heal it?
Yeah.
But sometimes society can lay a lot of stuff on you that cause a lot of people back and forth with the tenants blaming. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. And it sounds like, you know, you bring up a good point. If you're exposed to some dysfunction at an early age and you're smart enough or you're lucky enough to see that there's something wrong here, it's a way for you to stave off having that very quality yourself. So when you saw your mom blaming all these other variables, you must have somehow said, she's not on the right track. Did you do something like that?
What I wound up doing was trying to heal her because I internalized.
Yeah,
I wound up trying to heal her.
Yeah.
But as I got older, as a man of color, the racism, you know, I don't know who put that in. I know it's in place, but it has an effect. So I was able to understand by her trying to do things within a racial society and her trying to get past that, and no matter what she did, it was never enough this or you know, it's just hearing anything. As I understood as I got older and working on myself, I understood, you know, and a lot of times, I guess with couples too, like some you say somebody was trying to save somebody, we become the savior, become whatever. It's just being somebody else. We come in trying to be somebody else in the first place. And so by me understanding that, as I worked on myself. It took a lot of work.
It sounds like
I
you have.
I understand it a lot. So I was able to heal a lot and not take on whether relationship or any take was mine. And let another person heal what they need to heal without blaming.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Gene.
Thank you guys so much.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Gene.
Yeah, we're getting people that really have done the work for themselves.
212-757-5555.
And not ashamed to own their own part in it.
We heard from two callers who I think classified themselves as blamers, and I'd love to hear from someone who thinks that they've lived more so as a blamee.
Yeah.
And someone who's been on the other side of that. It is hard to admit to. I mean, look, in fairness, it's hard to admit to both. You know, I think there is an impulse for everyone to feel above it all, but the reality is we're not, you know. And I mean, I can cop to having blamed a lot of situations from my childhood on, you know, things I was dissatisfied with in adulthood. I blamed my parents, I blamed teachers, authority figures, and, you know, at the end of the day, I do have to confront myself with, you know, the truth that I was also short-sighted, and I was also not necessarily responsible in ways that I could have been.
Mm.
But it was easy for me to kind of shift that responsibility off to third parties.
Yeah. Did you get to do that with somebody? Because I think it's really useful to share with somebody, look, I really feel like I got a raw deal as a kid, as a child, and I want to blame my parents. And there's some aspect to it that's truthful, that's real. And I think it's healing. And I'm wondering, did you get a chance to share who you wanted to blame? As a vehicle or a way to get over it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely my teachers were high up on the list. I mean, I got myself into my fair share of trouble growing up in school. And I think in my earlier years, I was always more upset about getting caught than I was about actually having contrition for, you know, the trouble I may have caused. And a lot of times, you know, the reason I was caught was, well, or the people who caught me were the people that I directed my blame towards instead of, right, you know, taking stock and saying, hey, you know, maybe okay, I shouldn't have been, you know, getting into, you know, fistfights in the schoolyard sort of thing.
It's so interesting when you see somebody in the midst of blaming, own it, like in the midst of a tirade or something, finally say, you know what? This is my fault, you know. I have to admit, you know, I screwed up. It just totally melts the situation, you know. So imagine if you could do that with your teachers as a kid. Yeah, you know, you're right. I did cut class. And
what was the expression? Could you accept that if a part of what I'm saying is true?
Yes. Let's say
a part.
And do it like Armand. Let's say part of what you're saying is true.
Right.
Isn't that so disarming?
It is.
Right? And, you know, and in the right climate, in the right moment, you know, that's all it takes is just a simple phrase. Let's just say I'm part of what you're saying is true.
It looks like we just lost a call.
Yes,
fell off the line. 212-757-5555. Give us a call back. 212-757-5555.
So again, we could say these stages. And you really want to memorize these. You just say,
yeah, run them down.
During this conflict, I felt X. I felt hurt. Let's say hurt. What triggered that feeling was I felt excluded. I felt like you weren't listening to me. I felt ignored. And when I was feeling overlooked or ignored, it reminded me of X, Y, Z. And then here's the big one. Lately, I've been feeling, you know, not myself. I feel I've been ignoring important aspects of my life. I feel I've been feeling lost. And so when you sit around with that, that's the fourth step. You can say, oh, my part in this, let's say my part in this is X. And number six, the next time I can do it better. And one thing you, my partner, can do better would be this. When you see me lost, say something to me. When you see me confused or see me in a certain way for a few months, say something to me. Okay, we have
so yeah, it comes down to ownership, I guess, is a bottom line, right? Comes down to ownership.
Ultimately, ownership. And we heard lovely from Abby, her ownership. Here's somebody who could have stayed bitter for a long,
forever,
long time.
Forever, really.
And she owns her part of it.
Let's take another call. We have Bruce on the line. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Bruce.
I think there's a good use for blame sometimes when somebody takes things on themselves that really aren't their fault. And, some friends of mine, I tell them straight up, we're talking about something. I was like, look, you're too hard on yourself. Maybe you should look at, like, you know, the circumstances or what somebody did to you. Not to over blame, but like, could you be like, that really wasn't your fault and you're taking it on, you know? So
yeah,
that was just my thought.
So does it make you sad to think a friend of yours is doing that to themselves?
Yeah, sometimes I scold them for it. I was like, but it's out of love, because it's like, you're a wonderful person. You don't have to say you're sorry for that. You know, like, yeah, oh, I'm sorry I didn't call you back. It's like, you kind of overemphasize being sorry.
Yeah.
So I say, you know, you really don't have to do that. You're totally fine.
Well,
wonderful.
Bruce, it's not to say that there's never a place for blame. I mean, of course, there's responsibility. And, you know, if we're driving and I'm not looking in front of me and, you know, I rear-end the car in front of me, I should rightfully be assigned the blame in that situation. But it's true.
Yeah.
I think, as you said, people do – there is a subset of person who is ready to kind of take on the blame because they feel like that's going to be the smoothest way to go about things. And I think those people do need the compassion that you've described in, you know, letting them off the hook and letting them know that, you know, they don't have to do that.
I wonder if you could say to your friend, listen, it hurts me when you blame yourself.
I didn't get that far, though. I mean, she got it. She understands. She even admitted it.
Yeah.
So,
Well, look, you're a heartfelt guy. It sounds like you got a big heart, and you're on the lookout for these kinds of things. And the fact that you're even aware of it says a lot about you. So,
oh, thank you.
So, look, thanks for calling, and hopefully you keep calling.
You guys, too. You guys got big hearts.
Thanks so much.
You know.
Thanks, Bruce. Good to hear from you again.
Be well.
Take care. 212-757-5555.
That's an honest feeling. Just saying it straight, it hurts me. You know, when he feels somebody's blaming themselves too much, to say it actually hurts me when you do that to yourself, you know, it's a tough thing to do, but
it
might be the next step.
But hey, you know, don't blame me. Think about that phrase, that expression. Don't blame me. How much we've heard that over the years, even just in a light way, in a lighthearted way. Hey, don't blame me. It's not my fault, right? Hear that a lot. Hear that all the time. We got another caller on the line.
We have Liz on the line.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I was just listening to the gentleman speaking about friends that tend to blame themselves. And
yeah.
I guess I can identify with that right now because someone really close to me passed away.
Yeah.
And I'm blaming myself.
Yeah.
For their demise.
Right.
I don't feel I did enough. I was going to therapy to help them out, to help myself out as well.
Yeah.
And
I hope you're still doing something.
Well, but for silly reasons, unfortunately, you know, I didn't. I stopped for stupid reasons, and now that person has gone on.
So what would you want to say to them that you wanted to do for them?
I wish I'd never stopped what I was doing.
Yeah.
I wish I would have kept going. And I blame myself for them not being in this world anymore.
Well, Liz, I want to say I can relate to what you're saying because I lost a very, very dear friend to a drug overdose. And I blamed myself for that loss, for not doing more, for not intervening more, for not confronting them more. And I understand. I understand that impulse. And it's amazing how, you know, we can blame others for these small things. But when it comes to something as monumental as a death, it's so easy to blame ourselves. And so I can relate to what you're going through. I think it's important that we have compassion for ourselves and understanding that it sounds like the death that you're dealing with is similarly tragic to the one that I dealt with, whether it was drugs, I don't know. But I understand the impulse to blame yourself, and I just hope that you can have compassion for yourself to also understand that it was not your fault.
Yeah, I'm trying to come to terms with that. It's not easy.
It's not easy. So I hope you have somebody with you. If you could have done one thing, what would you have done?
I definitely would have kept going to the therapy had I known what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I would have been more, even more, I guess, sensitive and trying to motivate even more so than what I was already doing. And probably try to get more people to motivate this person all the more to take care of themselves and not to play with their health. And so it's a very heavy burden to carry.
Yeah, it is. I'm trying. I know. Keep trying, Liz. Keep trying. If you want to call us here, you can call us at the center or keep going to the therapy you're getting. I know it's painful, but it's important to finish your grief and go through it and see all aspects of it. So you're in the right place. And if you process it, you'll come out of this stronger. So
thank you.
I wish you well and thanks for the call.
Thank you, Liz. I'm very sorry to hear about your loss.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a tough one,
yeah,
right?
That is a tough one. And it's like I said,
Kevin. And it's not necessarily rational.
Well, it's not. And it's so easy to blame, like we talked about, superficialities in the first half of the program and how it's so easy to shift the blame externally for that when, you know, in theory, we should be able to take responsibility for something that's superficial, and yet it's something that gets blamed away. And yet when it comes to something profound as the death of a loved one, so many people internalize that and take on the blame where it doesn't necessarily belong.
How did you let it go?
You know, I dealt with therapy. I did a lot of talking. Mm-hmm. I talked about it a lot, just beyond therapy, just with family and friends. Yeah. And but I did hold myself responsible for this death for close to a year before I was able to let that go, before I understood that I was not at fault. But, you know, you can't tell, no matter how many people told me that, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to let that go.
You had to talk it out.
Until I was ready to let that go.
Yeah.
And I really, really connect with and identify with Liz's hardship right now, because it is such a difficult thing. It sounds to me like the death that she just went through was unexpected or tragic, and or if not unexpected, then untimely. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's such such a challenge. It's such a heartbreaking thing to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough blame to get over, but I think you're right. I think time takes care of it, and a year is a long time, but you know, maybe not so much. In what this friend meant to you.
Yeah.
A year isn't all that much. But I think talking it out and getting it out and saying it out, you get to see part of this is true. Let's say part of it is I could have done a little bit more, part of it. But I gave it my all. When I did give, I gave it my all.
Kev, we're running out of time. I want to thank everyone who called today, everyone who tuned in. And remember, you can send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. Or give us a phone call here at the center, 212-757-4488. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from, you know, your comments and suggestions and any kind of notes you want to email us or call us. Or, you know, if you're looking for counseling of your own, you're always welcome to do that as well. Remember, we're here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 o'clock on 99.5 FM WBAI. And on the web, on the iTunes store, you can download us free.
And send an email to positivemind@wbai.org. If you want to comment on today's show, if you want to share your own story of blaming and self-blame, or even, you know, a blame for a death or something that's really tough to handle, but it works. It helps to just put it out there. So positivemind@wbai.org.
See you next week.
See you next time.
Go easy on yourself.
Yeah.